Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 18th of March. You're listening to the roundtable panel. Mike Spain is here, associate editor of the Times Union of Albany.
Good morning.
Schenectady, Troy, and Environs. Ray Graff is here, newsman extraordinaire. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
And WAMC's very own Dr. Ellen Chartok.
Welcome back, Joe. We all hate you for going to Florida for 2 days.
It was lovely. It was lovely. Does it help that it rained a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Well,
sure.
It helps. But the other question,
makes us feel better.
But the other question we have is, was it worth it having to come back into this? In other words, you know, as Arlo has said, there's no dark unless there's a light that can go into it. So you get it?
Yeah.
Are you following?
Well, yeah, I'm following you. I have to say
lightly here.
At 4 p.m., our plane was supposed to leave Tampa, and we got in around 2:30 this morning.
Ooh.
So regardless of weather, I was very, very happy to get home.
Wow, that's something. I'm really glad to hear that.
I'm delighted to sleep in my own bed and to be home.
But not much.
Not for long at all.
But let's talk about issues and things that are going on. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So this is, I know you guys talked about this yesterday. I find it continually fascinating, of course, the story of the Malaysian jetliner that is missing. And there's so many facets to the story, and I know we've gone over many of them. The one which I think has caught my eye yesterday was because this is something that Alan brought up at the very, very beginning, which was, there's no cell phone calls. You know, we had that. We certainly have seen this in plane distresses.
9/11.
Right. Since 9/11, and even before and after, there have been numerous times where trouble has taken place, and there was some question as to, well, where were they? They didn't know the path of the plane. They didn't know. Well, there's some question as to whether of what caused that, so in the New York Times this morning, they're talking about. That Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, even when they did this wide U-turn, they have been able to determine there have been no phone calls, there was no Twitter postings, there was no Weibo postings, there was no Instagram photos, there was no communication from anyone on the board since it was diverted, which is extremely rare. So it does add another layer of mystery to it, of either what was the level of communication, and more dire, of course, is what was the state of the passengers at that point, especially with the questions of the altitude of the plane. But we are living in a time where people have communication devices with them at all times that's somewhat regulated on airplanes. But it does seem remarkable that at no time did we get any sense at all that something. I mean, even in the very last seconds before a crash, there have been tweets and things in the past that give you some indication. And in this, we have absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it's what's terrifying about it is thinking about the state of what was going on in that airplane, and were were the passengers aware that it was being diverted, and were they aware that they were in danger, or were they oblivious to it? Was there some kind of decompression where they had passed out, or maybe that was deliberate? If all of this was deliberate, maybe that was part of the plan. Who knows? And it just must be so troubling to the relatives and the family and friends. And the interesting point in that story was that most of the people on the plane were Chinese. Many were young and affluent, so they are the kind of the generation that tweets all the time.
And they have the highest rate of usage in the world, I believe, is what the article said. Yeah. Yeah.
So if it wasn't a technical reason like high altitude, which was one of the suggestions in this story, or low
why
altitude.
The signals couldn't get through, or why they were passed out?
Both.
Another point. But why the signals wouldn't get through at 45,000 feet, unless you're holding your cell phone to the window and you have a direct line to a tower, it's very unlikely you'd get a strong enough signal, they said.
But you would figure that if the altitude went down at any point, mm-hmm. that there would have been some communication then, even as you are whatever's happening to the
plane. Well, you got to assume that we went, if it went low and went over the two major cities when it went turned around, assuming that is true, and who knows what is true, then they would
stop
been,
right there.
They would have been within cell phone tower range. So either all the phones were taken away,
ooh,
or they were
that's
all
interesting.
Dead, or they were all passed out from decompression yeah. above the ceiling of the plane, which was 43,000 feet, and they went up to 45,000 feet allegedly. So, you know, if this was a planned thing, then probably step two would be take away everyone's cell phones.
Yeah. It seems hard to do in this day and age.
Why?
But yes.
Four guys with box cutters took down two buildings. I mean, that doesn't seem like a hard thing to do.
No, but you have 280 passengers, and you're trying to get every device that they have. Most people probably have multiple devices. I'm not saying what you're saying.
If I hold a gun to your head and say, give me your cell phone, what are you going to do?
Yeah, but in that situation, somebody 20 rows behind you would probably be tweeting that, you know, the way the generation
right.
that we're talking about
unless they're really
communicates.
Scared.
Yeah, but yeah. the one thing we yeah. mentioned yesterday while you were in Florida, Joe, was that...
you got to bring that up again?
I did it
Stick
on purpose.
Stick the knife in.
I did it. I did it. It was a shot.
It was 83 degrees.
It was a
That's
shot.
We wondered.
Yeah.
And no question about it, it was that... This just leads everybody to make up 1,000 potentials. And mine,
right.
the one I made, and of course it was tongue-in-cheek because somebody will write, it was that a giant spaceship had sucked this thing in, you know, and that...
Well, nothing is off the table. I mean, you make the joke, but nothing is off the table at this point. I mean, it is...
Well, that's off the table.
I think so.
Because the signals came 7 hours or so after, you know, the pings from the engines came 7 hours after it went off the grid, so to speak.
Yeah, but you earthlings are
Martin,
so naive.
Okay, yeah. That's fine. Let's make light of the tragedy.
No, we shouldn't do that.
No, we shouldn't. Dear WAMC.
What is it that everybody is infatuated with this story?
Because it could be us. No, because it could be us.
The mystery.
Because every time any of us get on a plane, you know, as Joe just mentioned, we'll be thinking about this.
I don't think you cannot think about it. Obviously, the pilots and the flight crew aren't going to say anything, but you know they're thinking about it. They know that everyone on the plane is thinking about
sure.
it, and you know that there are again we deal with tragedy with humor often, and you know they're jokes like you know. Where are we going to end up, and will they lose us?
Will anybody ever think of us again?
Yeah, you know, it's just sort of inevitable, I think, when something like this goes on. But to your point, Mike, I mean, I think what's fascinating about the story is that every single solitary day, some other thing comes out that completely reverses what we knew before. And I just, you know, this map in the New York Times.
Millions of square
from
miles.
Going from Kazakhstan to the southern tip of Australia,
right.
of the search area, is, you know, a third of the globe.
Right. But remember...
and that's insane to me.
When a plane drops in altitude that much, you lose range because
right.
of the air resistance
right.
on the plane. So when you're up high, you get better gas mileage, essentially. So that changes the circle. I mean... Who the heck knows?
Yeah, I mean, it could be that in our lifetime they won't find this if it's at the bottom of the Indian Ocean or something like that.
I doubt it.
I think that's you doubt that they will find it. Yeah,
now
see, that seems to be the prevailing with the U.S. officials that I have seen and former FAA administrators as well as terrorism experts have said on the news programs that they believe that at some point they'll find it. Now, I don't know.
That's a safe position to take.
Yeah.
I mean, we found the Titanic. We did all of that stuff.
Right. It's a good point. It took 100 years.
Was it the Thresher? Was that the submarine, nuclear submarine
that just disappeared?
And they found remnants of it many years later, what they believe was it. But, you know, it's really expanding all of our literacy in these areas. Of,
it is.
You know, about the way that
pinging.
And I mean, well, I thought.
Did you mean geography?
Well, no. I
just
meant,
in geography alone,
geography.
I'm learning
it's
an awful
good for
lot.
That, too. I've had the Atlas out a couple times.
Right.
Just kind of trying to. And that that's healthy, I guess, from a global perspective.
Yeah, there's the silver lining.
Myanmar and then Nepal. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
But the technology, you know, wouldn't you think a black box just pings constantly forever until it's discovered and that airplanes flying over will get that signal and then they can go down in the ocean and fish it out?
Isn't it interesting that the Malaysians, the airliners, went for the budget plan on the engine pinging? In other words, the makers of the 777 said, "Well, we've got the executive version, which you'll get you'll get all the data from the engine. You'll get all this detailed
Rolls-Royce. Rolls Royce.
Okay, you get all the detailed stuff, but you can just go for the budget. It's Malaysia. You can just have the ping. We just know it's still there. It's fine.
Yeah, that's not good.
You know, so." That's interesting. Maybe they should all have the detailed information.
Well, and then you have to think also of what this is going to mean for the future of flying for the pilots. I mean, if it is, and going with Mike's thought for a moment, if we never find it, if we don't know definitively what happened, and again, we may never know that, then if we end the speculation with the pilots were somehow involved, can you imagine how that is going to change what pilots have to do on flights and what the – because right now there's a concern about them turning off the surveillance, turning off the pingers, and having manipulation of the aircraft. And I can only imagine what kind of instructions are going to come after that.
Yeah, I saw a column that mentioned why should pilots be allowed to turn these off? You know, and questioning, you know, what's wrong?
Everybody
you know, they
needs
should
a
have,
column.
Right, everybody needs a column. That's right.
Was that yours?
But there was an explanation that if you if the system was failing, you need to be able to reboot it. Which fixes a lot of things that are electronic, just turning it off and leaving it off a few seconds and turning it back on.
Or maybe there's a reason that you're flying into where you really do want it off.
Yeah, I mean, there might be.
If you're stealing the plane, obviously.
I meant like if, you know.
I mean, you know, it's funny how the tide turns on all the speculation. And it's still all speculation, but it seems to be more and more experts are saying, well, clearly something criminal went on here. So, if somebody stole a 777, that's impressive. But if you stole it to reuse it in a terror situation, they're not that fast. I don't see how you're going to get that thing back off the ground without somebody seeing it.
Well, it could be that there was a plan to do that, and then it went awry.
Well, yeah.
You know, and that seems plausible to me, that somebody had some wacky intention to land it someplace and hold people hostage or demand some political, you know, make some political demand. But then that could have gone awry. And that's what happened with Flight 93, you know, over Pennsylvania on September 11th. You know, they had planned to, it appears they had planned to fly that into a building in Washington, D.C., but, thank God it went awry.
We're going to come back. We'll talk about other issues as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can comment on our webpage, our Facebook page, or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Foods since 1978 in Woodstock. Organic produce, supplements, local goods, and health and beauty care. Health workshops every month. SunflowerNatural.com for calendar. Binghamton University to help students convert intellectual studies to real-world applications. Binghamton.edu. And New York Pain Management, offering pain management for chronic pain and spine care in a private office setting with Drs. Charles Gordon and Quentin Fung. Be set free. NYPainFree.com.
We are back. It is our roundtable panel. Panelists, do you want to go on to other issues or would you like to continue?
Yes.
All right. All in and all done. All right. Let's move on to other issues. I just want to check. Let's talk about U.S. sanctions. I know you all talked about this yesterday on the program. The president made it official yesterday. President Vladimir Putin of Russia signed a decree on Monday formally recognizing Crimea as a sovereign and independent state, laying the groundwork for annexation and defying the U.S. and Europe just hours after they imposed their first financial sanctions against Moscow since the crisis in the Ukraine began. Mr. Putin issued his late-night decree after the region declared independence earlier in the day and asked Russia to annex it in keeping with the results of a referendum conducted Sunday under the watch of Russian troops. I don't know how much you guys went into this, but yesterday we had the announcement by the president. There were the sanctions that I think everyone pretty much agreed weren't expected to do much. Right, Alan? I mean,
it's a joke.
So, but it's a joke you sort of have to do, right?
It's a joke this president has to do, that's for sure. And there's the BBC was making much this early hours of the morning, this morning about 3 o'clock, talking about the difference between the United States approach to this and its political needs and the EU's approach, and that there's a big difference between the two groups because one has to deal on a daily basis with Russia. I wondered about something, guys. Did anybody see the list? I know who was people who are not allowed
officials.
To travel into the country and all.
Yeah.
Was Putin on the list?
No, he was not.
Now, this is all Putin, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, they don't want to make an international war criminal out of him officially. I mean, that's what that would
but
do.
But you put all the schlemiels on the list, but you don't put the guy who's actually making the decision.
Well, I mean,
you know, on the list.
This is all like chess. It's the way you play the game of diplomacy.
But they have something. Kasparov, and we have Bernie.
Somebody
Klotz.
Playing checkers.
Right. Yes.
Can Snowden come back?
I think that as I mentioned yesterday, it's the governor's favorite saying. It is what it is, Governor Cuomo, that is, and
that's right.
And that's what it is. You know, they've got it. His popularity in Russia has soared.
Putin.
That's true. He's doing everything in his power to do this. And I think, frankly, he's a guy who a lot of people who have studied him psychologically have, from the outside, of course, you know, have said he enjoys the rush from this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of scary that someone would behave on the international level based on trying to get a little rush over something.
On the other hand, this morning I was thinking, well, Teddy Roosevelt, others, this morning I was thinking about Texas. Remember how we got Texas? Texas said, okay, we got to declare ourselves independent. And then all of a sudden, wink, wink, nod, nod, the United States came on. And, you know, and we were part of, Texas was part of us, and we've been suffering ever since. So that happened. Oh, did I say that?
Well, some Texans don't regard that as having happened, and they still think they're an independent state. You know, that's a big political populist expression you'll hear. But, you know what? It seems to me that, as you say, it is what it is. And the narrative that Moscow is making is that this was an error, essentially, made back in 1954 by Khrushchev.
Mm-hmm.
It, for centuries, had been part of Russia. Russia's navy was at the Crimea in the Black Sea. They had an enormous influence and presence, and the population was heavily Russian. And all this is a correction of historical error done by a probably drunken premier at the time. You know, this is the way it's portrayed. Even Mikhail Gorbachev, who a lot of Russians don't like because he oversaw the essential disillusion of the Soviet Union. Even he came out and said that this is the right thing. So in Russia, not here, but in Russia, this is really like Texas. You know, it's like correcting it and making it part of the Mother Russia again. And over time, if they don't do anything else, that's probably going to...
It's about 30 seconds.
Okay, if you step back and take a look at this whole thing, and really stop being, you know, American. You can say there's an argument to be made here.
You're done.
Done.
Okay, good. I didn't want to cut you off because we had like 10 more. So that's fine. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, is with us. Newsman Ray Graff is here. And WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. And we have a couple folks to get to, starting with Alan's letter from
Gary. And Gary says, in the wake of the Gore-Bush election and Koch brothers and Citizens United, us having a problem with election in Crimea is a little like the pot calling the kettle black. Also, let Russia pay for Crimea by forgiving all of Ukraine's debt so Ukraine goes its European way. So simple, right?
Right?
No.
Okay. And Michael says, should self-determination of the people of the Crimea be a factor here? Question mark. Has this been discussed before?
Yes, yes. We discussed it yesterday.
Yep. Maybe I missed it. So, Michael, there you go. And just a reminder for those of you who care, these conversations are available.
On oh, you're kidding back me. Really?
Yeah.
So wait a second. So you mean you can just go to WAMC.org
and slash roundtable.
And slash roundtable, and there would be. Now, what if you just went to WAMC.org? Could you still get it
you
from
there?
You
still find it. It's often on the top story.
Go to the roundtable page. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah. So why would you want to subject yourself to this again?
Well, no, that's
if you
funny.
Missed it, Ray.
There are people who really love this program. I have a friend named Michael. He always speaks when he's mad at you, and he speaks with icicles hanging off each
is
word.
That what that was?
Yes.
So you're the freeze miser?
It was a shot.
Well done.
Yeah.
All right. Let us go to some stories while I have, you know, Mike, as I was sitting in the airport in Tampa waiting for my flight to get to go off there and fly.
Right.
As the other word, I believe the word.
Take off.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, not get off, take off. Okay.
Right. Depending on what kind, you know.
Going up in the air.
Paging Erica Jong.
Did he ever return?
At the airport in
yes,
Tampa?
Yes, and I wrote you, and you
that's
said,
my cousin you're talking about.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could get a, you know, go on another airline, and with that, JetBlue is apparently going to hit Albany skies
yes.
in 2015. So
yes.
This is exciting. Chuck Schumer has been touting this for a long time and has been saying that this is a possibility and made it a reality yesterday.
Yeah, the low-fare carrier JetBlue has been servicing just about every other upstate city. It services Newburgh. It services the Bradley Airport outside Hartford and a few others. But it has not been servicing Albany.
Because they said, Mike, that we were too close to New York. Well, Newburgh is a lot closer to New York, isn't
it? Right, but they don't fly to New York from Newburgh. They fly to Florida and I think a couple of Caribbean destinations. In 2015, according to this announcement that was made at the Albany International Airport yesterday, JetBlue will begin service out of Albany. The story by our business editor, Eric Anderson, explains that the options will first be just two locations in Florida, Orlando and Fort Lauderdale. So it really wouldn't have helped
Mickey
you
Mouse.
In Tampa.
No, but, no, that's all right.
But the idea is there.
I would have traveled.
Yeah. Officials from JetBlue were on hand. It's interesting because JetBlue was founded 15 years ago with some help from Senator Schumer, you know, to get into the New York market and wanted to get some competition in there.
And he took a shot, by the way, in that story. I noticed that Hartford, he took a shot.
Oh, really?
He took a shot.
Oh, yeah, he did. You know, and said it's better, you know, it'll be better.
It's better here than Hartford?
Better, yeah.
Well, one of the problems is that there is no air service between Albany and
the capital?
JFK.
Sure.
And JetBlue is not going to provide that. If you go to Syracuse or Rochester or Buffalo, you can hop down to JFK, and therefore you can hit all of the national, options for JetBlue. Go to the West Coast, go to Denver, you know, go all over.
And why exactly is that not happening?
Well, airlines have not been able to make it successful.
That's
if you
right.
want to fly into New
from
York.
From Albany to Washington?
No, I'm sorry, Albany to JFK.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's what he said, Ray.
To Kennedy Airport. The problem there is that it just hasn't been profitable for any airline, and JetBlue doesn't right now intend to do it. However, the president of JetBlue did say that, you know, when we opened in Buffalo, we only had 2 flights a day. Now they have 16 flights a day. So there's the potential that they can find some other routes. If they flew from here to Washington, D.C., which is what a lot of people had speculated JetBlue would do out of the gate. But if they did add that service, you could pick up JetBlue to all points across the country, and that would make it pretty interesting. Yeah.
And that's how we got Buffalo Wings.
Yes, that's true. And
is it?
Well, anyway,
Keep going, Mike. We're hoping.
People who use the Albany Airport. It's interesting. The fares at the Albany Airport have gone up 50% on average since 2009, and enplanements have gone down. So this might bring back some needed competition and force other airlines. You know, you may recall back when Southwest Airlines, another low fare airline, came to Albany, it caused all the competitors to lower their prices, and that was a good long time that lasted. But they've creeped back up, and there is hope that JetBlue coming in at least for flights to Florida will begin some competition that will force the others to lower.
Well, we love Albany Airport. It's a beautiful airport.
It is a great airport. It's easy to get in and out of.
Yeah. I love that airport.
It's a wonderful airport. Yeah. Unfortunately, it would be better if there were more places, planes to take, and as you say, emplanements.
Yes, it's a technical term, which means I get on a plane, I get off a plane.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Also, wasn't part of the issue to deal with interstate travel? I mean, yes, you mentioned JFK, but
you can't go. Right. There's no easy way to get to Buffalo. You have to go
You can get on the plane.
Pittsburgh.
Take it to Orlando, and then take another plane to Texas.
That's right. That's an important part of this this new service that JetBlue will be offering. It will be another route.
But
to
in
Texas.
The end, you still don't get to Buffalo.
No, and then there's the question of why you'd want to go in the first place, and that's a whole nother show.
Was that a shot?
Yes, it was. And let's get on Gary, Indiana next.
Legislators have complained
about that.
All right, service to upstate cities is limited. But to be remedied by probably improvements in Amtrak.
Well, yeah, high-speed rail. That's what NPR is all about. High-speed rail stories. Let's have another one.
Like, what's her name from Japan? Susan Stamberg.
She's
morning.
In Japan. That's right.
She just gave a very interesting story about the tea service in Japan.
Ceremony.
And one wonders, since we give them a lot of money at NPR, really one wonders who paid for that trip. Now, maybe it was that she was there anyway.
Right.
And maybe that she was on vacation anyway. And maybe it was that they got a grant to do it.
Right.
But I'd like to know.
Well, that and the JetBlue story make an interesting connection. I'm not sure what.
There you go.
Well, was that a shot? It was a shot.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to change the subject.
Great.
Yes. Nearly 9,000 New Yorkers are getting their driver's licenses suspended due to non-payment of state taxes. The crackdown applies to those who owe more than $10,000 under a program started last year. And Governor Cuomo announced that 8,900 New Yorkers had their driver's license suspended for failing to pay taxes that they owe New York State. So this is a program that started last year. The first details are in. 8,900 people affected.
I like it.
It seems reasonable that if you owe that much in taxes that you should, you know, as the Commissioner of Motor Vehicles points out, it's a privilege to drive. It's not an automatic right, and maybe some of your privileges ought to be constricted until you get into a program to repay what you owe.
Is it any different than when you go and you find out that you have parking tickets, past parking tickets, and you have to pay those?
You can't
register your car until you do that. Mm-hmm. Or, quite frankly, if you go and you go to a concert or a theater event and you want one of those ear things, you give them your license, even in the museum.
And they don't give
your
it
license.
Back.
They don't give your license back until you give them their audio thing back.
Yeah, they do.
Yes, so it seems reasonable, and if that many people are in arrears on their taxes, it's a reasonable step to get them to
comply. Well, you know, I live in Massachusetts, but I pay a lot of New York taxes. I'll tell you that right now, and I don't like
a commuter.
And I don't like the idea that, you know, people just with impunity don't pay their taxes.
I don't understand, though. If they know who these people are,
yeah,
and they owe more than $10,000,
yeah,
why go the step of canceling their license, because why don't they just take their money and just say, hey, we're garnishing your wages, or go that route and get the money.
They do that also.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of tactics. This is another.
I think this is the under $10,000 thing.
No, this is over $10,000, isn't it?
No, under.
Oh, under?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. Yeah. I'm sorry, if you owe more than $10,000,
that's a pretty reasonable threshold. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, there will be some foul-ups, as we say.
So there needs to be a quick way to remedy foul-ups. There has to be, as the commissioner noted in this story, that, you know, there are people that have stepped forward and are working with them to do the right thing.
Sure.
It sounds like if you get into a program where your payments are being made.
A 12-step tax program.
To pay.
12 payments, 12 easy payments, and you'll be getting your license back.
Let us continue with the state of New York for a moment, where the New York State Senate voted on Monday to reject legislation that would have granted state tuition aid to undocumented immigrants, dealing a blow to immigrants' advocates who had made it their top priority in the Capitol. The Senate, controlled by Republicans and a small group of Democrats, failed to pass the measure despite a vote of 30 in favor and 29 opposed. It required 32 votes in favor to pass, and not to pick on, but just to make a point that Mike made that was brilliant a few moments ago during break, is that this is a program that is in Texas, right?
Right. Texas is one of the few states. Four states, California, New Mexico, Washington, the state of Washington, and Texas, do offer state financial aid to undocumented students, and that's according to the National Conference of State Legislators.
Okay, so this is our version of the so-called DREAM Act.
It is indeed, yes.
And the idea is, and it makes great sense to me, why punish the kids who come over here? It's really crazy. The Republicans in the state Senate, Dean Skelos and crew, say nothing doing. We're not going to do this. They haven't learned a thing from the Obama election, in which they lost most of the Hispanic votes as a result of opposing the DREAM Act and the rest. However, one has to, and I know they keep notes on this stuff, and I apologize in advance. And if nobody hears from me for a few days, the governor, as you may know, is responsible for this. It is this governor who said, as a part of his election campaign, that he was going to veto the Apportionment Act, in which these guys get to draw their own districts. And he didn't do it. OK, then did he go to the so-called rump group and say Klein and the others who have this who are collaborating with the Republicans? Did he go to them and did he say to them, cut it out, go back where you belong with the Democrats? That's responsible two-party government. No, he didn't. So I'm telling you now that if he's arguing, if this governor's arguing, we need the DREAM Act, I know where to lay this responsibility.
Well, he was expected to sign it, although he hasn't been vocally in support of it. He was expected to go along with it. And it was Jeff Klein, the leader of the Democratic Independent Coalition, who did introduce it. But, a couple of two Democrats did vote against it. I mean, it doesn't play well with parents who are struggling and that was a quote from one of the upstate legislators, that parents are struggling to keep their, legal kids in college.
Same thing with the prisons.
Right. It's very similar to that. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to see the value of a program that doesn't benefit you when you're struggling, even though it makes eminent sense not to penalize these children of immigrants.
You are so smart, Mike. That's right. Ray, you look very perplexed.
No, I'm
Were you gonna say something?
Drinking it all in. No, continue.
No, well, there's not much more to say other than
it's not going to happen this year.
That it won't by a couple of votes, and that's because of vacancies, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Maybe you could explain that if it had.
It needs 32 votes.
It needs 32
to pass.
And
if you don't get the 32, and if a couple of guys are absent or accidentally on purpose, as my mother used to say, or whatever else, or they're absent, or the seats are, or they're dead, they died, or they moved on, or they were convicted of a felony.
Under arrest, yeah.
Yeah, then all of those are possibilities of why you don't get 32 votes.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up our discussion this morning in our final 8 or 9 minutes. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC goes from River Valley Market, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalleymarket.coop. Plastic and reconstructive surgery at Berkshire Health Systems. Plastic reconstructive and hand surgery and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santamarina. BerkshireHealthSystems.org/plastics. And Current Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. CurrentCompliance.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our discussion. We have a couple more issues to get to, but before we do that, we will check the mailbag.
Oh, good. So from John, whose license gets suspended when Central Hudson or Bob's Realty or Private Prisons Incorporated don't pay their taxes? That's from him. And then we also have from Richard on the subject of Texas. We should encourage Texas to have a referendum and become independent. The federal government sends more money to Texas than they take in tax revenue, says Richard. And then you have a third one. Go ahead.
No, I don't.
Oh, I thought you said there was one on.
I did, but I did not pre-read. Tell Alan that Sandberg's piece was on an exhibit at the Sackler Gallery in Washington, D.C. If I wanted to hear smears on NPR Morning Edition, I'd listen to Fox News. Steve.
I get it. Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough. So
she didn't go to Japan.
Oh, she didn't go to Japan. I thought they said
it was outside the capital.
So there you go.
It was
on display.
Gallery.
Oh, my bad.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. I want to publicly apologize.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. So
I can swear I heard the word Japan in there.
I think that was where it
was about Japanese. Yeah. The practice of.
Can we call you Brit Hume
tea
now?
you really know how to hurt a guy.
You may. I deserve it.
Brit Hume, not the nicest man.
Do you know him?
Why let the facts ruin a good story?
I know. Anyway, let's see.
God bless Katie Britton.
One of those great stories that you can't tell on the air, but Brit Hume going off on Daniel Patrick Moynihan.
Oh, really?
Was one
now,
of the
how,
funniest
how
things.
How were you seen. Party to this?
He was over here at the state capitol. Was over at the State University.
Now, bear in mind that you are now telling the story.
No, I'm not going to tell the story. I can tell the story.
Well, you've started.
No, I know.
Now, everyone out there wants to know what happened.
He was disrespectful to the late senator?
Yes.
And what about the guy without his pants on?
Who was that?
What?
You did an interview with a guy without his pants on, an animal guy.
That was Bob Barker.
Yeah, Bob Barker.
Who's not on Fox.
And also, I think it was probably more known for his television game show work
yeah.
than...
But now when I hear the story...
Wow.
Happy Gilmore punched him out in that movie.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, try to get out of this now. Get back into the show. I don't know how.
I have not a clue, Ray. I don't know.
No sequence here.
Did this
no
go,
sequence.
Is this the way it went for you?
Hmm. You know. Yeah, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was just like for me.
No.
No, okay. You want to talk about tax preparers or Big Bang? We have 5 minutes. Okay, Big Bang Theory. This is interesting. They're apparently...
Tax preparers.
Oh. A Big Bang Theory gets a big boost. This is in the Washington Post. In the beginning, the universe got very big, very fast, transforming itself into a fraction of an instant from something almost infinitesimally small to something imponderably vast, a cosmos so huge that no one will ever be able to see it all. This is the premise of an idea called cosmic inflation.
Yeah.
A powerful twist on the Big Bang Theory, and Monday it received a major boost from an experiment at the South Pole called BICEP 2. A team of astronomers from the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics announced that it had detected ripples from gravitational waves created in a violent inflationary event at the dawn of time.
Or so they
wow.
think.
Wow.
You almost kind of need to be an astrophysicist to understand some of this story.
Well, Ray is almost an astrophysicist.
Oh, absolutely.
He'll explain it to us,
yes,
won't
I've
you,
seen some show. So I watched Cosmos the other night, yeah. So therefore I'm an astrophysicist. No, I'll ask Berman about this. I'm going to see him on Friday.
Yeah,
and
I'd be curious to hear what Bob Berman has to say.
Interestingly, gravitational waves.
That's a good question. Is that right?
Is he on Food Friday?
No, he's doing an event at the Linda.
I'm introducing him,
and then leaving.
It's such a struggle when there is a complicated story like this to sort of make it accessible to the masses, and I'm struggling trying to, as a member of the masses, I'm struggling to try to understand it.
I think you're absolutely right. What's interesting about the story is that you're like, oh, okay, well, that they have the proof that they were looking for in some way. They were looking for something, they found it, and this is a big deal.
And it happened quick.
The reaction in the scientific community was exultant, they say. And the new results was hailed as potentially one of the biggest discoveries of the past two decades. So hopefully that means we probably should learn what it means.
But here's the thing.
Here's the
bottom line that I get from doing the astronomy show every month or 2 months, whatever. The more they know, the less they know. And this is the underlying fact for all that we survey in the universe. We know
this is the scientific rule of thumb.
The tiniest fraction of what is the universe is about. And the more they know, the less they know. So we can be exultant. We have no idea why we're exultant here in the Studio A. However, just be aware that it's causing angst to some physicist right now, saying, well, gosh, that changes everything. So
now what?
So we end the show. That's what.
Well, that's right. We let you ponder.
Right. They do say that it does help fill a gap and kind of close a gap and explain some things that were not easily understood before.
It'll open up a zillion more questions.
We would love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. My thanks to Mike Spain, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok. We'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah.
For another go-around.
Tomorrow. And?
We'll start the day tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yes, there you go. You're listening to the Roundtable at WAMC.